E-A-L.
Responsible eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to Ask a Vegan. Good evening. Well, this is our fourth broadcast of Ask a Vegan on the Real Worldwide Radio. I'm very excited about that. And let's see, let's just kind of ease into this show. There's a lot of different things I want to talk about. And looks like we have somebody just joined on Skype. Maybe we'll hear from somebody later. But the way this show works is you can send me an email at info@realmeals.org. You can chat with me on AIM, Instant Message, that's AOL Instant Message, and my name on both of those is Ask a Vegan. And then Skype, Ask a Vegan, AIM, Ask a Vegan, or the email info@realmeals.org. And this show originated to be a conversation. That's why it's called Ask a Vegan. And I do get questions throughout the week at my email, but it would really be great if we could have a conversation here right now. Anyway, my world, the vegan world, it's really a beautiful place. And I just want to share all the good stuff that I experience and answer any questions that you may have. But the thing that I like to do with this show, number one, is to talk about things that are in the news. They always make me laugh and cry at the same time. Of course, I've got all the answers, and I wish everybody would listen to me. Okay, the big story in the news the last few weeks is pink slime. You've heard about it, yes? What's crazy about pink slime? I'll give you a little intro about what the talk is about, and then what I want to do is give you the real voice of reason on pink slime, because personally, I don't think people are talking about what we really should be talking about. So what's going on? This pink slime thing, apparently, beef is processed from time to time in order to create something called lean, finely textured beef, which is a meat that's treated to get rid of fat, and then it's added back into ground beef. Ammonium hydroxide is used to treat this product. And people seem to be up in arms because this treated product that has ammonium hydroxide in it makes what is now called pink slime. I think it first was named that on ABC News. People seem to be grossed out by this and don't want it in their meat and are starting to talk about getting the USDA to get it out of the healthy school lunch program. I'm sorry. The school lunch program. The school lunch program is not a healthy lunch program. And so people are going pretty nuts about this pink slime thing. So what I did was I went online and I thought I would read about pink slime from the most conservative beef-loving sources I could find, because I wanted to get... The truth is not the word coming to mind, but I wanted to get information from sources that were so far from my way of thinking and then kind of interpret my opinion from it. And that's exactly what I did. So reading an article from Fox News, one of my favorite news sources, is an article, How ABC News Smeared a Stellar Company with Pink Slime. And when they say in their article, let's look at the facts. Beef Products, Inc., which makes the beef, is trying to prevent deadly E. coli bacteria. While a couple of stories mention the goal to kill germs or kill bacteria, neither of those phrasing sound especially scary. E. coli is so terrifying that the Centers for Disease Control give it a separate page on its website, saying some forms can cause diarrhea, while others cause urinary tract infections, respiratory illness, and pneumonia, and other illnesses. Okay, that's from Fox News. And I'm reading this, and I'm saying, yeah, we should be scared of E. coli. Uh-huh. And we should be so scared about it that we shouldn't want to eat beef. Right? I mean, why should we want to dip the product in ammonium hydroxide just to clean it up or to get the bacteria away? The problem is not, well, the big problem is not the chemical processing to treat and, dare I say, purify this food. The problem is back up. Go to the source. The problem is animals confined in filthy, unnatural conditions where they're living in their own filth, their own excrement, their own urine. They're fed horrible things and they get sick. Okay, they're in pain, they're uncomfortable, and they're sick. And as a result, the flesh has all kinds of crap in it, literally crap. And so then we try and come up with ways to keep people from dying from eating this stuff. And ammonium hydroxide is one of those lovely chemicals. Now let's take a moment and talk about chemicals. Chemicals seem to have a kind of a bad reputation. But you know what? There are good chemicals and there are bad chemicals. Are you a good chemical or a bad chemical? I'm not a chemical at all. Yes, we are all filled with chemicals, proteins, carbohydrates, fats, everything that makes up our body. They're chemicals. So yeah, there are good chemicals. And I happen to have a particular liking about chemicals because I have a background in chemical engineering. And so yeah, there are good chemicals. Ammonium hydroxide, another interesting thing. This is kind of like a side on all of this conversation, but all of the articles I'm reading about this pink slime talk about the process that Beef Products Incorporated is using to clean up this lean, finely textured beef thing. And they all say that ammonium hydroxide gas is used. Now, I don't know if ammonium hydroxide gas is some kind of newfangled thing that I've never heard of, but I always thought, from my chemical background, that ammonium hydroxide was a liquid. And indeed, there is no ammonium hydroxide gas. So I'm not exactly sure what people are talking about in these articles when they say ammonium hydroxide gas. But ammonium hydroxide is simply ammonia gas in water. And so maybe they're talking about some sort of vaporous spray. I'm not really sure, and I don't think it really matters. The point is, we don't need to know exactly what Beef Products Inc. is doing. Or do we? Do we need to know exactly what's going on with our food? Yeah, I think we do need to know. Okay, so there's this pink slime. Everybody's hysterical about what's going on with ammonium hydroxide in beef. And I'm thinking, really? Is this something really we should be getting hysterical about? Do we know what goes on with our food on a daily basis in processing plants everywhere? I don't even know where to start, but let's first start about meat and where it comes from. Yes, and there's a comment here that someone just texted that ammonia is stuff used as a cleaning product. Yes, the Windex has ammonia in it. It's used as a cleaning product. But, you know, ammonia isn't necessarily bad. In high concentrations, yes, it can be very toxic. I've known people that have really been cleaning nuts and have used a lot of ammonia and have passed out as a result. And you never, ever, ever, repeat after me, never, ever want to mix ammonia with chlorine bleach. And that's a very bad cocktail, creating all kinds of deadly gases. So we have to be careful with these products, but there are so many things that go on with our food that I'm just thinking, what's all the hoopla about this pink slime? When plant foods are grown in industrial farms, conventional farms, not organic farms, there's all kinds of toxic chemicals that are sprinkled on the soil that get on and into the food. So, why aren't we talking about that? And have you seen any of those videos on how hot dogs are manufactured? You could go to YouTube and just type in, how do you make hot dogs? Okay, you can come up with some videos that show really how disgusting hot dog manufacture is. In one part of one that I watched, they talked about a beef smoothie. All these different parts are blended together and until you make this really disgusting looking product. And sure, they add stuff to it. All kinds of spices and nitrates. Nitrates aren't healthy. Why aren't we talking about that? Well, we do talk about it, but the complaint du jour, or du mois, that means the complaint of this month, is pink slime, ammonium hydroxide in beef. And I always love quoting my dad, if you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem. The problem here is the growing of animals in confined, filthy conditions. And the best way to solve that problem is to eliminate factory farms. Eliminate factory farms. And one of the best ways as individuals that we can make a statement and participate in this conversation and make a difference is to not eat animals. Okay, but of course, that's what a vegan's going to say, right? And that's what this vegan is saying. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm careful not to make rustling paper sounds here because I've got a lot of paper. So there's been some articles talking about people that think the ammonium hydroxide is really a good thing to add to beef. And I've got some articles here from the Wall Street Journal, and one is just a sad, sad story written by a mom who lost her child when he was 6 years old from contaminated ground beef back in 1993. Nancy Donnelly has an article, and she talks about his symptoms, cramping and bowel movements, and it was just horrible. And he died. And he died because of E. coli toxins in the meat. And so she really thinks that it's a great thing, a great, great thing to have. I'm just thinking about Tony Bennett saying, great, it's a great, great thing. it's a great thing to have ammonium hydroxide in minute amounts during the processing to improve the safety of the product. And it's routinely used in the food industry So why are we going nuts about this? And I'm just saying this is a sad story because the story should be get rid of the beef. We don't need beef. We know that. And you know, even if we didn't have E. coli, even if we didn't have the filthy bacteria, we have so many other problems related to the growing of animals to feed people. And the long list of chronic diseases that we have that are devastating our economy with healthcare, from diseases that are totally preventable from consuming too much animal food. It's a very simple solution, and yet people are just like going nuts over pink slime today. Okay, so I thought we picked on one bad chemical today, ammonium hydroxide, which really isn't a bad chemical. It's really a very good chemical. Does a lot of lovely things. I thought, okay, maybe some people are thinking, I don't want to eat beef anymore because they're using this ammonium hydroxide to treat it, so I'm going to eat more fish, right? Okay, well, think about your fish for a minute, please, because there are chemicals in your fish, too. Oh, yeah. What about sodium tripolyphosphate? Can we say that together? Sodium tripolyphosphate. Yeah, that's in a lot of your fish today. I got a couple of articles have been written at foodandwaterwatch.org a few years ago, back in 2007, and there's a more recent one that was recently posted, and they talk about sodium tripolyphosphate. Why aren't people talking about that? So it's a suspected neurotoxin in large quantities. It's a registered pesticide, and it's a known air contaminant in the state of California. California tends to have more rigorous environmental regulations. A neurotoxin is something that's toxic to the brain, which can cause all kinds of brain malfunctions. And you don't want to have any kind of thing that's toxic to the human body, of course. So why is it used in seafood? It's used with items like scallops, shrimp, and anything that's filleted that's very flaky, like sole or imitation crab meat. And what we do to it, this is the global we, I'm not participating in this, but it's used to make seafood appear firmer, smoother, and glossier. Seafood manufacturers may soak your seafood in a quick chemical bath of sodium tripolyphosphate in order to achieve these effects. Very nice. And I was amused because one of the recommendations from Food and Water Watch was to ask your waiters at seafood restaurants if their fish is indeed soaked in sodium tripolyphosphate. And I'm thinking, they're not going to know. They're not going to tell you. I have a neighbor who often, when we're in a restaurant and she orders fish, she says, "Is your fish fresh?" What are they going to say? No. Of course they're going to say it's fresh, whether it is or not. And what does fresh mean anyway in today's food lingo? Anyway, so if you're moving from beef to fish, especially because of this ammonium hydroxide recent thing, think about sodium tripolyphosphate that your fish has been soaking in. What's your fish soaking in? And then, okay, that's just one chemical. I'm just going to name one more, and I'm sure that there are many, many other chemicals that are touching our food products, especially the processed foods. that we may not want to put in our bodies. So how about, this is one of my favorite words to say, canthaxanthin. That's fun to say, canthaxanthin. Canthaxanthin, canthaxanthin. Canthaxanthin. I can't, well, see, now I'm getting tongue twisted. But it is used in farmed salmon to make it pink. We've talked about this before, but because salmon in the industrial aquacultural farms don't consume certain sea products that make their flesh pink, they are a lovely shade of gray. But people don't want to consume salmon that are gray. And so people that are farming these salmons use these lovely little cards, like paint cards, where you can pick the color wall you want in your living room. You can pick the color pink that you want for your salmon, and it's canthaxanthin that makes farmed salmon pink. Well, it's also believed that high intakes of canthaxanthin will lead to some deposition on the human retina and can cause some serious vision problems. And who knows what else? Why aren't we talking about that? We were talking about pink slime. Why don't we talk about pink salmon slime or something like that? And hot dogs, too. I was talking about hot dogs before. They're gray, too. And it's the nitrates that give them their reddish color. So it's all about, what is it all about? It's all about the look, the feel, the texture. It's all about the disguise, so that you don't even know what it is you're eating. I want you to know. You know why I want you to know? Because I want you to live a long, happy life with the best quality of life you possibly can have, with limited pain and suffering. And how do we do that? Well, certainly we don't know our destiny, and we can't avoid everything. And none of us gets out of this world alive, right? But we want to have the best quality life we possibly can, and consuming these highly processed animal foods simply are not healthy. Okay, so I just wanted to repeat that there are a number of ways to join in the conversation, and that is to send me an email at info@realmeals.org, and you can do that now during the show or anytime during the week, or you could go on Skype.com, and put in the search bar, Ask a Vegan. Now, first, of course, you have to register. You have to have an account at Skype.com. And it's a really useful thing to have because you can talk to people all over the world. And if you haven't started doing it, I highly recommend it. It's really fun. And if you have people that are traveling, you can talk to them online. If you've got a video camera on your computer, you can look at them and talk to them. It's really amazing technology. But we can do that right now by going to Skype.com, and you can look for in the search bar Ask a Vegan and connect with me, and I'll connect with you. And then you can either use the chat box for comments and questions, or we can talk. We can talk a little bit here. And that would be really fun. So I'd love to hear from you. Okay, let's see. Let's talk a little bit more about the news, because why not? That's what I like to talk about. I can't not talk about sugar. I always like talking about sugar. Why? Because it's so sweet, and because people eat a lot of sugar. But the interesting thing that was in the news recently is that the sugar people are fighting, apparently, with the corn people. It's sugar versus corn. And it's like, are you the good sweetener or the bad sweetener? Are you a good sweetener or a bad sweetener? Well, I personally think that sugar is not so bad, especially if we're not consuming a lot of sugar. If you're drinking a lot of sodas and all kinds of food with added sugar, you're probably getting too much sugar. And I just want to back up a minute because something I didn't clarify on Skype.com is that Ask a Vegan is all one word. There are no spaces in between it. Somebody just made a comment about that. And so it's Ask a Vegan, no spaces. You should be able to find me. This sugar thing. When I see people reaching for a little sweet and low for their tea or some other artificial sweetener with aspartame, that drives me nutty because a little bit of sugar is not going to harm you. It's the 12 teaspoons in your soda. It's the sugar in all of the restaurant food that you don't even know you're getting, and the pounds of sugar you're consuming day in and day out without even realizing it. Oh, hello. Hello. Welcome to Ask a Vegan.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, so.
Oh, wait a minute. I have a little echo, but I think we're fine. Okay.
Great. Yeah, hi. I'm calling from California. I listen to your show all the time. I think it's really great.
Thank you.
And just want to say thanks for doing such a great job. And I have one comment about finding you on Skype. I typed in Ask a Vegan, all one word, and I couldn't find you. But I found you by going to Responsible Eating and Living on Skype. That's how I found you.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's the way to do it, Responsible Eating and Living. Thank you, Gary, for that tip. You see, I don't normally look for myself, but I guess
yeah.
I should look for myself from time to time.
Well, have a great show. I'm listening, and it's good information, so thank you.
Okay, thank you for that tip, Responsible Eating and Living on Skype. Very good. Whew. Back to sugar. So the simple thing about sugar is stay away from the sugary sweet sodas, eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, stay away from the processed food, you'll be fine. And the thing is that a lot of these sugary foods, they either have sugar in them or they have corn syrup, especially high fructose corn syrup. And boy, poor high fructose corn syrup has gotten such a bad rap. Don't we feel bad for high fructose corn syrup? Well, not really. Sugar can be bad, but yeah, high fructose corn syrup is especially bad. And what's going on now is that there's a lawsuit. Sugar is seeking revenge against the competition from high fructose corn syrup. And you may have seen recently, I think in a campaign, and I was wondering, how can these high fructose corn people say this? And sugar is saying it now too, because they were basically saying that your body can't tell the difference between table sugar and high fructose corn syrup. And I sure think that our bodies can. But the bottom line is high fructose corn syrup, sugar, too much is not a good thing. And we're seeing it in obesity. We're seeing it with diabetes. We're seeing it with tooth decay. And what drives me nutty about that is that we're putting fluoride in our water all over the place just so we don't get tooth decay. Why don't we keep the majority of chemicals out of our water supply? Because we need tap water. And brush our teeth on a regular basis and not consume too many sugary foods. Okay, what an idea. Oh, but that's too complicated. So it'll be curious to see what happens with this lawsuit, sugar versus high fructose corn syrup. More chemicals in the news. I love talking about chemicals. My first job out of college was with DuPont when I worked as a chemical engineer, and you may remember their slogan back then, better living through chemistry. And, you know, in many ways, we do have better living with chemicals. But at the same time, people don't think about side effects. People don't think about cleaning up their mess when they use chemicals. And so we have lots of problems with chemicals, good things and bad things. So some of the good news, and it's a kind of tainted good news, but have you heard about methyl iodide? This was some crazy nightmare. Well, recently, methyl iodide was pulled from Arista Life Science from the U.S. market. And people, farmers, strawberry farmers, were considering using methyl iodide as a replacement for the very popular pesticide methyl bromide. And there's some history here. Some interesting history, I think. So, once upon a time, in a faraway land, no, actually right here, there was, back in 1987, the Montreal Protocol. And you may not be familiar with the Montreal Protocol, but you are familiar. Most people are familiar with one of the outcomes of that protocol, and that was to get Freon out of products because it was causing a hole in our ozone layer. And there were other chemicals that were listed in the Montreal Protocol to get rid of, or at least phase out by a certain period of time. And methyl bromide was identified as an ozone-depleting substance by the Montreal Protocol and was added to a phase out of production by 2005 in developed countries and by 2015 in developing countries. And there was kind of like a loophole of sorts where methyl bromide could be used in the United States for critical agricultural uses and if there wasn't a suitable alternative. And so strawberry farmers, especially in California, have been using methyl bromide for conventional strawberry production. And you know, methyl bromide, it doesn't just put holes in the ozone. It's another nasty toxic chemical. I don't want methyl bromide on my strawberries. And you know what? I don't like the fact that people that are growing strawberries, or any other food for that matter, have to be exposed to toxic chemicals. And so I'm thinking about it selfishly, where I don't want to have chemical residues in my body that are toxic, but I don't want to cause pain and suffering to anybody else. Sometimes when people say that organic food is too expensive and they don't want to buy it and they think that maybe the residues aren't going to be damaging or that problematic to their personal health, I always mention the other reason why we don't want to buy conventional industrial food, because of the farmers that are exposed to all of these toxic chemicals. And there have been some really, really sad stories, birth defects and cancers and all kinds of problems by the farmers, migrant workers who are overly exposed. There are regulations for the handling of these toxic chemicals, and you and I both know that if regulations can be skimped upon or broken when no one's looking, they will be, especially if it can cause things to be made faster and less expensively. All right, so methyl bromide still being used, and there was a discussion of using methyl iodide because it is not an ozone-depleting chemical. But it is toxic. And I read some horrifying stories about all the special precautions that need to be taken in order to use methyl iodide. Okay, so the good news is we're not going to be using methyl iodide. The company that was making it pulled it, and there was too much scientific and public opposition. Happy ending. The problem is, what are the alternatives? So methyl bromide has been used less and less every year, but it is still used in California for strawberries. It's also used for some non-organic industrial tomato farming in Florida. So it's still around. It's still nasty. And the farmers that do not grow organic strawberries, the farmers that grow conventional strawberries, they're all moaning and screaming and complaining that what's going to happen and the price of strawberries is going to go up and people are not going to have access to as much as many strawberries as have been available. And I say, let's see. Let's wait and see. Certainly, we're getting more and more farmers involved in the organic movement, and there are more organic strawberries being produced. And I personally think when challenges like this come up, we solve those challenges. We can improve. So I'm really looking forward to much bigger organic strawberry production. And let's all grow our own. It's fun to grow strawberries. So that's another chemical, methyl iodide. Methyl iodide and methyl bromide. I just wanted to give you a little heads up. It's not really clear yet, but there is some discussion, since we've been talking about sweeteners, sugar, and corn syrup. I love maple syrup. I don't eat a lot of maple syrup, but occasionally I have it, and it's really, really delicious. I certainly will never, ever use maple-flavored syrup products that are made typically with corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup. But because the climate has been so mild, it might affect the maple syrup production, because what happens is the trees need to have this change in very cold climate to warm climate. And if the weather gets warm too soon, the sap may start flowing too soon and also not have a very good flavor. So what's going to happen, maybe, is maple syrup is going to be less available and more expensive. So if you see any good prices for maple syrup, I say stock up. Stock up. There was an article in the New York Times today about Paraguay and deforestation. Did you read it? I haven't read many articles recently on deforestation, so in some ways I was glad that it was getting a little focus. We've read more about things that are going on in rainforests and tropical forests with respect to palm oil, and we don't hear very much about soybean production and cattle grazing. But because Brazil is doing so well economically, they have been buying up land in Paraguay, and getting rid of rainforests at a dramatic and devastating rate. And we know that we're losing, we've already lost incredible amounts of rainforest. And there are so many sad things about this, because we need the rainforest for discovering new plant and animal species that could benefit our lives, for medicine, for so many different things. And we need a lot of that, those wild species, to kind of strengthen and enhance the overly hybridized plants that we grow normally in agriculture. In addition, when we get rid of the trees in a rainforest, too much carbon gets into the atmosphere, and that contributes to our lovely global warming problem. Okay, maybe some people don't believe in global warming. I'm not going to get too into it. But when the trees are taken away, the soil in rainforests, it's not a very strong, well-rooted, no pun intended, product. It will, after a few years, just blow away. So right now, these formerly tropical rainforest areas are now being used for cattle grazing and for also for growing soy to feed cattle that will ultimately feed people. Now, the exports of beef from these areas is primarily not to the United States, but to other countries. And it's just sad that as countries become more affluent, they want to pick up our very bad habits. And maybe if they're lucky, they can soak some of that beef in ammonium hydroxide and make some of the great stuff that we have here in the United States. But we need to protect our environment, because we all share the same planet. We share the same air, the same water, and the same climate. And what goes on so far away affects all of us everywhere. But it's also important, you know, I know some people will say when we talk, especially here in the United States, when we start using our muscle and start lecturing other countries about what to do, people from other countries will say, take care of your own problems. And I couldn't agree more. I recently heard from someone I know who lives in Pennsylvania, who's going through a potential scare, and I wanted to just talk a little bit about this. If anyone is interested or is in the Hazleton Heights area in Pennsylvania, apparently there's a piece of property that divides Hazleton Heights and Terrace, and it's recently been sold, and the neighborhood is now wondering what's going to happen to this property, and they think that that the new owners are going to build on it, and it's going to change the entire landscape there, create a lot of unpleasant noise, and also there's a belief that there are wetlands in this area, and the neighborhood wants to protect this piece of property, and so they're starting to make some noise, and they're looking for people to give them their support. If you want to know more about it, there's an article on standardspeaker.com called Neighbors Hope They Don't Lose Buffer from Noise After Heightsland Sale. It was published yesterday, March 24th. And Maria is looking for emails. You might email her at D like David R Maria WU at MSN.com. If you want to lend your voice and support with this issue, But it's important for us to pay attention to what's going on in our neighborhoods and in our own environment and protect it. Because if no one says anything, anything can happen. Unfortunately, there are things that go on and we're so busy with so many things, we don't know until it's too late. It's so important to pay attention. Pay attention. Very good. Let's see. Have I spoken about most of the things I wanted to talk about? I think so. So now we get to the yummy part of the show where I like to talk about food, my favorite subject. And I'm doing a thing now where I'm bringing up different fruits and vegetables that I personally don't use very often and that I'm going out of my way to purchase and try. And so the vegetable I'm going to talk about today is rhubarb. And how many of you have used rhubarb or tried it? Certainly, many of us have had rhubarb pie, strawberry rhubarb pie. It's a vegetable, but it's been labeled a fruit because it's been used in sweets and desserts. And I didn't know this, but it is related to buckwheat. It's very tart, and usually that's why it goes into desserts, because that tartness is balanced or tempered by a lot of sugar. But you can use it, and I didn't realize this, and I'm very excited to try it. I haven't, but I'm going to this week. You can use it in savory foods, and it works well with Indian-style foods, with Indian seasonings, with beans and lentils, where you just cut it up and you can steam it or cook it in liquid until it's soft. And I think it's going to be a very interesting flavor and a nice treat. And if you have any suggestions about what to do with rhubarb, I would love to hear about it. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org. I just realized, and I have to apologize, I'm doing too many things at the same time. But this show is live right now, March 25th, and I'm realizing that my website says that we're playing last week's show, and I have to fix that. That's an oops. Okay, sorry about that, but the show is live now, and it is March 25th. Okay, my bad. I had a really lovely opportunity yesterday to get a massage from a friend of mine who is working on building up a massage practice that she used to have and then stopped and now wants to get back into it. And what a lovely opportunity that was. And because she was practicing, the massage that I got was even longer than a standard one that you would get. And this was a Thai poultice massage, and really lovely because it uses a number of different herbs that supposedly have beneficial properties. And such a relaxing experience. You know, I love natural fragrances. Fragrances that come from herbs or flowers, essential oils. I'm not a fan at all of synthetic man-made chemical fragrances. And you can really tell the difference. And the natural ones have real therapeutic value. And what was fascinating about it was there were a variety of things in this particular poultice, lemongrass and a number of other things. As the massage went on, different fragrances became apparent. And I'm not exactly sure why that was, but maybe in the steaming of this particular poultice, some maybe required longer time than others. But it was such a lovely experience. So many different lovely fragrances. And that's the wonder of natural foods. They can be used for so many things. I've talked about personal care products a lot, and I try to the best of my ability to use personal care products that are made from things that I can eat, because I really don't want to put things that I wouldn't put in my mouth on my skin. The skin is the largest organ we have, and the things that we put in, the things that we put on our skin get into our bodies. And so these herbs and plant-based foods that are used for treatments, spa treatments, massages, facials, whatever, that's really the best way to go. And I think they're ultimately less expensive than some of these bottled creams and things that you can get in the store. And lemongrass, which was in this poultice, is also another great ingredient that you can use in food. Sometimes I don't have fresh lemon, and I always have fresh lemon. I use it in so many things, in my green juice and in different soups that I make. And because I don't like to use salt, lemon is a great food to bring out the flavor of other foods. But on occasion I'm out and I'll be making a soup, and lemongrass has that lemony flavor. I really recommend trying a little bit in your soups to give it a nice flavor. Well, there you go. You've been listening to Ask a Vegan, and I'm going to end the show in a minute or two, and I just wanted to remind you, of course, info@realmeals.org is the email to send me a message or a question, and what else can I tell you before I go? Did I get all of my notes? Yes, I did. Okay, thank you so much for joining me, and I am going to end with, well, my favorite real jingle. Have a great week.
R-E-A-L.
Responsible eating, responsible eating, responsible eating and living.
R-E-A-L.
Reels, good for the planet, the inhabitants who need sound advice on the right thing to do.
When it comes to good health,
we need facts that are true. To choose what to eat and save the planet too. That's responsible eating and living.
Oh, you'll find the real tools for you.